Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a weekly podcast to keep you up to date on what's new on our cloud platform, Microsoft Azure. Your hosts, Cynthia Crane, Evan Basilik, Sujit DeMello, Kendall Roden, Kel Teeter, and Russell Young discuss a different service or solution on each show, with subject matter experts to explain how to get started, how different services work, and how to make decisions in tricky scenarios. You can find out more about our podcast at azpodcast.com or follow us on Twitter at Azure Podcast.
Well, welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 344, being recorded on the 2nd of September, 2020, with special guest Ashish Chabria. I'm Sujit, and on Teams with me, we have Kendall, Cynthia, Kale, and of course, our special guest Ashish, who we're going to get to in just a minute. But before that, let's just talk about some of the updates in the Azure space. I believe, Cynthia, you put some notes that you wanted to discuss today.
I did. There are two updates I'd like to share. The first one is connector for AWS in Azure Cost Management and Billing is now GA. It was first announced as a preview in 2019, and what it allows you to do is give you a single pane of glass on your spending across Azure as well as AWS. So if you are a multi-cloud customer using AWS as well, this will be a very nifty connector where you're able to look at your budgeting and cost management all in the same place. The second one is an announcement for IoT plug and play. I know a couple of weeks ago we had Innes come on to talk about digital twins. What IoT plug and play is an open approach from Microsoft using the digital twin definition language. And what it allows different IoT devices to do is that they can now declare their capabilities to cloud solutions. So it essentially enables a number of different hardware manufacturers to build devices that can be integrated with cloud solutions, which has historically been a problem starting with IoT because there's such strict requirements of how those IoT devices should send signals, how they can work with the cloud. But with plug and play, you can now plug and play. Okay, I'll stop.
That is cool.
Kendall. Yeah.
That was quite a mouthful. Yeah, but well said. Thank you, Cynthia. And I actually like that first one that you talked about with the cost management, looking at Azure and AWS. And it's, I don't think this is meant to show that, hey, we're spending more on AWS or less on Azure or whatever. I think it's just supposed to give you like this overall single pane of glass, right, across all of your clouds. I'm hoping that they expand that to other clouds as well in the future. Well, that's pretty cool, though.
It's cool. I think it's cool. It's interesting just with Azure Arc and a lot of these other plays to help make multi-cloud or management easier. But it's also
like your on-premises environment too with Azure Arc, right?
Yeah.
It's not just other, right?
But I am curious, like how many customers are actually looking at their AWS spend in Azure? I would be curious. Because I've never worked with customers who have, I haven't worked with any customers on this solution, but it would be interesting to really understand, like, how are customers viewing their billing now? Because I know there's third-party solutions you can use, like KubeCost, that can help with, like, multi-cluster management for AKS. But I haven't seen yet a customer who's like, oh, yeah, I'm viewing my AWS, spend inside of Azure. So I'm curious to see if that becomes a customer conversation that pops up more. So I have a few things I just want to go over really briefly. So Durable Function, the 2.3.0 release has just happened. A few quick updates on that. So things like long-running durable timers, I think it was 6 days before. Now they basically removed that so you can have an arbitrary amount for those long-duration workloads that are going to be running. They also have some partition management strategies, things that make geo-redundancy a little bit more seamless. So definitely take a look at all of those new features that have been released as part of that 2.3 being released. And then I also wanted to talk really briefly a few Azure Cache for Redis updates. So there's a VS Code extension, which is going to make, I think, the development experience a little bit more integrated, being able to kind of test some of that connection in the development cycle versus once you've already gone through the deployment process. And then also private link going preview for Azure Cache for Redis. So private link really being that, you know, virtual network integration via this private network, making sure you're not going over the public internet when you connect back to your virtual network in Azure. So you'll get that private IP address coming from the virtual network in Azure to connect to. So two quick updates on that. And then last but not least, there are a couple of CVEs that were announced in upstream Kubernetes that are obviously going to trickle down into, you know, the AKS cluster that you might be running. So we've released those. One of them causes some nodes to fail, basically, if there's a large amount of data that a pod's writing to your etcd host file. And then another one has to do with privilege escalation within the container itself that could actually compromise your node. So just keep that in mind. Those are things that you want to mitigate. And obviously on the Azure blog, we actually announce those, and you most likely will get an email if you actually are running a cluster that has those compromised pods or setups. I think that one of them is specifically for clusters that are allowing privilege escalation from the container. So there are mitigation strategies. So just keep that in mind, right? You want to be cognizant as to if you've been compromised. So there are two that were released on September 1st that you can check out at the Azure blog to see if you're potentially vulnerable there. That's all I have.
I see you got a lot of insight into this, given your new role on the Kubernetes upstream project, right? You're mentoring there. What's the right term?
So,
shadowing?
Yeah, so I was shadowing the 1.19 release, which just happened. So they're actually the 1.20 release team shadow applications are open until I think the 11th. Don't quote me on that date, but I think it's the 11th. So just get your applications in. You can find that on online if you just type in Kubernetes 1.20 release application. So definitely recommend that. Also, fun fact, I don't know if I've said this before, but my teammate and I are actually working on an AKS public office hours. So the first call is going to be September 10th at 11 CST. And I'll actually post a link to where you can find that information. But it'll be a biweekly publicly facing meeting where the Global Black Belt team and maybe some of the PG members will hop on. We'll talk through some of the AKS updates and some of the new features and do a quick demo and then have Q&A. So keep that in mind if you're interested.
Awesome. We'll be sure to get on there and heckle you guys a bit. All right, let's get on to our special guest. Sorry, Kale, is there anything you wanted to discuss, or should we just move to Ashish?
No, I don't have anything this week, so that's good.
All right, thanks. Okay, Ashish. Ashish came to us because of the previous episode we did with Clemens Vasters on Service Bus. He explained all the messaging options that we have, and Service Bus is, of course, one of the messaging options that we have in Azure. And he, of course, recommended Ashish to come and talk to us about an exciting update that's coming up in the Java space. And so, Ashish, please go ahead and introduce yourself, what you do at Microsoft, what your passion is, and we'll take it from there.
Sounds great. So I'm Ashish Chhabria. I'm the program manager on the Azure messaging team, which includes all the stuff that Clement spoke about in the last session, which is Service Bus, Event Hubs, Event Grid, Relay. And I'm mainly focused on Service Bus. Service Bus is obviously our message queuing, enterprise messaging broker as a service. It's a fully cloud native setup, which means, you know, you have a fully managed PaaS that's native to cloud, and all you need to do is provision a namespace and you're good to go. And you can essentially leverage that for point-to-point semantics using queues and PubSub semantics using topics and subscription. And you know, within our messaging product space, services is the oldest and the most mature one. Obviously, message queuing as a paradigm is a fairly mature space to be in. And I think that is that's obviously been our flagship product for some time. So today I'm happy to chat more about our public preview offering, where we have the Java Message Service 2.0 supported over AMQP. So
give us a bit of a intro into what JMS is all about, just for our listeners who may not be aware of it. I know for me, I just have a faint idea about that.
Sure, absolutely. So, you know, when we're looking at the message queuing space, there's the basic stuff that you can do with sends and receives, and, you know, the whole concept of, you know, having a point-to-point semantic using queues or PubSub using topics and subscriptions. But the idea is that there's a lot of fragmentation in the API contracts itself, right? So, you know, depending on which message queuing broker you come from or which one you're trying out, there may be some sort of, you know, custom API contracts that they offer. Within the Java space, you know, and Java's, you know, idea of write once, run anywhere, they decided to come up with a more standardized API contract that is then leveraged by each of these, you know, providers of that contract, right? So JMS is essentially a fancy way of saying, you know, it's a bunch of API contracts that is, you know, documented well, and it's provided as a standard for most message brokers to come in and snap to. And once they do that, you know, applications that leverage that contract, you know, either directly through Java API itself or through, you know, a Spring library, they can move across these brokers without worrying about the individual functionality of each of these brokers. So you could write something against, you know, against the JMS contract, have it talk to a broker in your dev environment, in your local environment, and have it to talk to a different broker in a different environment. And that's the standardization that is promoted by the Java ecosystem.
Okay. And so you were about to say what you're releasing now is that a new version of it, or is that a new feature that we're just coming out with for Azure?
Yeah. So what we're releasing now, so basically, you know, for service bus, AMQP is the protocol of choice. And, you know, there is the JMS implementation over AMQP, which is the Cupid client, which already exists. It's been out there for quite some time. And, you know, because we supported AMQP, we would support JMS with some caveats. And what we did over the past year and a half was to extend this to get it to full parity. Now, we're at about, you know, we initially started about 37% compatibility. Now we're at 91% compatibility. The idea is to get to a full 100% compatibility. So it's just a way of identifying, you know, how many test cases we pass and what our compatibility score is. And unsurprisingly, there's a nice way of, you know, calculating a percentage for it. So the idea is that, you know, we initially had it with some caveats, and now we are, you know, closing that gap to get to full compatibility with JMS.
So if I'm an application developer that wrote a Java app that was written to JMS standard today, and I say, you know, I'm just going to hook this up into Azure, what can I expect out of that experience?
Right. So like I mentioned, right, the message queuing space is a fairly mature space to be in, and folks have workloads running for 20 plus years. And, you know, obviously they may have adapted it over time, but the general idea is that they have, you know, these legacy applications that they don't want to refactor. But at the same time, we want to help them modernize their application by bringing them onto the cloud, and preferably to Azure Service Bus. And, you know, with that, give them a host of other offerings as a way to piecemeal modernize their stack, leverage high availability, disaster recovery, et cetera. So, you know, when we went ahead and tried to create this feature, the idea was to, you know, simply let's have them come in with their existing applications, change, you know, some dependencies through their Maven or Gradle or whatever dependency management they use. And once that is done, they can go ahead and make some configuration parameter changes, and they should be good to go. And that's exactly what we have been able to achieve. So if you have an existing Java application, you know, that is, you know, either a Java or a Spring application. With Java, you just need to change the POM XML dependencies. You plug in the appropriate service bus connection string, and you're good to go. Comparable experience with Spring JMS. We have Spring starters that we are building, which again, you can, you know, change the dependency through your POM XML, and then plug in the appropriate connection string in the application properties file. And that's it. You're good to go over there as well. So, you know, this makes sure that your business logic, your entire application code is independent of Service Bus, so you don't have to worry about any kind of vendor lock-in. But at the same time, you can easily and seamlessly move from whatever your on-premises or an IaaS hosted broker is, and then move over to Service Bus pretty much seamlessly.
You know, whenever I, as a developer, whenever I use one of these, you know, frameworks or whatever, I always worry about what am I losing, right? Like what in Service Bus am I going to lose by, say, writing to JMS to use Service Bus specifically? What's the downside to this approach?
Right. So there's no perceived downside, essentially. The idea is that we took an industry established contract, and we tried to reverse engineer the support for that into our service itself. So it wasn't that we have any client side, you know, improvements that we made. We didn't refactor an SDK or change it completely. What we did is we looked at what the standard Cupid JMS client, which is an open source Apache project, you know, which is leveraging AMQP to, you know, communicate with the broker. And that's what is used for ActiveMQ and any other, you know, open source broker as well. We looked at what, you know, what the AMQP frames were emitted from that client SDK itself. And then we went ahead and added the application behavior on the service side. So it's not like we're shipping something custom that limits you into the Service Bus ecosystem. And the idea is that, you know, obviously right now we're at 91% compatibility. The goal is to get to a full 100% compatibility, but the thumb rule here is you don't lose anything. You only get to gain with what a cloud native enterprise broker has to offer over an IaaS hosted broker that you have to manage, you know, by provisioning the VMs, the storage, you know, installing the brokers, worrying about updates and stuff like that. So we're getting rid of all of those steps and you know, hopefully you see the value in not having to manage the DevOps piece, you know, of deployments for your name, for your broker itself, and just focus on writing your application code.
So is that typically the migration path that you're seeing? Is it IaaS to more PaaS-based? Is it self-hosted on-premises? Like, what, I guess, what kind of capitalization were you hoping you would bring into Azure? Like, is this a unique value proposition? Is this something that a lot of other cloud providers, you know, also have implemented? So I guess kind of how unique is this service, or is this kind of something that, you know, we saw as being critical? I know we're working a lot on Java on Azure in general. So just kind of curious where you're seeing customers come from and where else they might be able to do this.
Right, absolutely. Yeah, so typically the two themes that we look, you know, that make sense for Service Bus is to allow customers to lift and shift into Azure and also or to modernize as they move into Azure, right? And that's where, you know, depending on what conversation they're having with us, we make product recommendations. But then we figured, you know, Service Bus is already a cloud native modern enterprise messaging, you know, fully managed PaaS. Why not combine those two themes together? So it's lift and shift and then modernize. And the idea here is pretty straightforward, right? You have an application that's been running in a data center that you've been managing with an IaaS hosted broker. And this is a pretty standard flow, right? You know, someone's having, you know, an ActiveMQ deployment that they have locally, or an IBM MQ deployment that they have locally, or RabbitMQ or any other MQ offering you can consider. And they want to say, you know what, I'm, you know, this is great. It's been working. I don't want to, you know, fix something that isn't broken, but I'd love to have, you know, availability zones. I would love to have geo recovery. I would love to have, you know, the virtual networks, IP filtering, private endpoints backed by the Azure backbone. And for these folks, you know, what they're actually saying is that they want to modernize their stack without changing anything on their application side. So that's where the theme comes in, when we want to fuse the concept of lifting and shifting into Azure directly. So you come in with no code changes, but at the same time, you have an opportunity to modernize it. And, you know, a lot of these that I mentioned earlier about virtual networks, IP filtering, you know, even bring your own key encryption, a lot of that is the non-functional piece. We also have deeper integration with the rest of the Azure PaaS ecosystem, like logic apps and functions. And that helps them, you know, essentially, you know, in place, replace their, you know, their legacy applications with, you know, with a dedicated functions deployment or logic apps deployment. So it's not just the non-functional pieces that we are able to modernize, but also the functional bit. And now they can leverage the best of serverless, PaaS, and all the other good stuff that Azure has to offer. So it's really a two-pronged approach that we're trying to essentially fuse and provide more value to our customer. Speaking of the broader Java on Azure and the Spring on Azure initiatives, we definitely fit squarely right there. And this is, you know, this was co-managed, you know, with our deeper integration with the Java and Spring team. And the idea here is that as more and more Java workloads come into Azure, we want to, you know, again, provide the same value to them. You don't have to go ahead, provision VM storage, et cetera. You know, if you're using these brokers in the on-premises environment, we have a corresponding PaaS, and you can leverage it right out of the box and make your DevOps life easier. So,
now, Ashish, from a performance perspective, is there any like recommended configuration parameters that developers should be thinking about, or is it just okay, whatever you use today, just keep it as it is?
Yeah. So. Nothing's changed in the way, you know, on the data plane. So, you know, the performance that Service Bus offers is the same as we offered before. It doesn't change with the API contract itself. The way it works is that we have, you know, standard and premium. This feature, the Java Message Services premium only, you know, the new preview that we're offering. And within the premium space, we provision namespaces with 1, 2, 4, or 8 messaging units. And these are essentially compute and storage bits that we have allocated to, you know, given namespace that allow customers to get a dedicated resourcing for their namespace. And accordingly, they have a more reliable throughput and latency expectation set. So, you know, I think there's benchmarking documentation that we can probably, you know, also reference to folks. But the idea is that on a per MU level, you could expect about 4 MB of data in and out in terms of, you know, the net throughput. And, you know, obviously there are some assumptions we made along the way. The good news is that, you know, since we have, you know, a fully scalable, fully enterprise managed service, you can essentially scale up from 1 to 8 and then back depending on how your workloads adapt through the business day. So and you can actually leverage the Azure Monitor metrics to have automatic scale up and scale down based on what you know, the current metrics look like. So let's say if you have, you know, workloads that spike at 9 a.m. in the morning, you know, start of business, and then 5 p.m. close of business, you can scale up and scale down appropriately and accommodate that spiky workload.
That's awesome. Looks like you guys have thought about just about everything there.
Yeah. Well, the idea here is that it's obviously a very mature product. We're just, you know, looking to expand the ecosystems we support and limit the amount of work that customers need to do to jump onto the modernization bandwagon.
All right. Are there any kind of future updates that you guys are you can talk about now that you're thinking about for this? You mentioned some of the ones to get to 100%. Is there anything specifically that did you want to call out there?
Absolutely. So there are two things that I'll talk about. One is the concept of a durable terminus, which is actually part of the JMS spec, but you know, it's definitely going to add value for anybody who's using Service Bus through JMS or not. And the idea here is that, you know, since it's a fully managed PaaS, any kind of, you know, disconnects between the service and the client applications, you know, it's a standard practice that you need to have retry policy. But currently we don't, you know, let's say you're connected to the service and for whatever reason there was a disconnect. Let's say the service had to restart, the client application had to restart, or the network connection broke. You know, we don't really persist the store on the service side, but the idea is that now we're going to go ahead and actually persist that data. So in the event of any kind of a hiccup in the connectivity because of a restart or a connection disconnect, as soon as the client application reconnects with the service bus broker itself, we'll be able to rebuild the entire connection state because the service had persisted the data. Which means that any of the messages that were, you know, locked by the application will now be made available, and you know, the application pick up where it left off. So that's the first part. That's the durable terminus. It's actually a pretty cool feature that will span across both JMS and the regular SDKs. Mm-hmm. And secondly, we're going to expand our support for large messages. So currently we have 256 KB in standard tier and 1 MB in the premium tier. You know, like we mentioned, the focus is to allow customers to lift, shift, and modernize. And the idea is that a lot of these folks are using the MQ provider on an IaaS hosted setup or, you know, on their on-premises system. And, you know, IBM specifically has a 100 MB message size limit. So, you know, for folks who are looking to make a quick move, they had the luxury in the past to not have to worry about message sizes. So, you know, if we have to move them to service bus with the 1 MB size, it's a little more challenging. But we're going to, you know, relax that limit and allow them to send up to 100 megabyte message sizes. Now, again, the 100 MB is a consideration to simplify the lift, shift, and modernize, you know, steps. It's not a target because, you know, we want to make sure we have a high throughput system and due to that, it's better to send smaller message sizes. So, you know, it's out there for folks who want to move and make it easier. But I would recommend to use that additional time to consider restructuring the application and reduce the message sizes. So those are the two that actually fit in well with the JMS and Java ecosystem features that we would like to support and onboard as we go and grow the product.
That's really awesome.
Yeah.
Great, Ashish. Any more tidbits you want to share with us? We'll of course get some links to some of this documentation. We can put them along with the show notes so folks have it as ready reference. Any more questions for Ashish before we let him go? And Ashish, anything else that you'd like to share or before we wrap up here?
No, I'm just glad we got to talk about the Java workloads. You know, obviously, we've had Java SDKs and .NET SDKs, which are our two primary SDKs. But it's really great that we are getting to work towards a unified, you know, universal API, for lack of a better word, that most data plane services, you know, have the luxury of, but messaging has been kind of sidelined. So this is an effort to get to a unified API and, you know, bring more customer value by avoiding, you know, any kind of vendor lock-in. And at the same time, you know, allowing them to get their applications, you know, onboarded and modernized as quickly as possible. So thanks. Thanks for this opportunity.
Thank you very much again for coming on. Appreciate it.
Awesome. My pleasure.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any thoughts, questions, or just want to connect, find us on Twitter at Azure Podcast. Background music has been taken from ccmixer.org under the Creative Commons license. We hope you'll tune in again soon to keep learning with us.